Vicky Achiang waits her turn to see the doctor at the Lumumba Health Center in Kisumu in western Kenya. She is a 35-year-old widow with five young children. And like virtually everyone visiting this clinic, she has HIV.
So many people have it, and so many people are living with it.
Achiang assumes she got the virus from her husband, who died of AIDS 2 years ago.
Life is very difficult without a husband, you know.
You miss your husband?
I miss him so much. Yeah.
He got AIDS from his first wife, who also died of the disease. That leaves Achiang to run the small family farm with her five kids.
They have to work. At times they miss going to school because we have to plow the farm.
Many people here still don't know they have HIV. In fact, the government estimates 80% of Kenyans who are HIV positive don't know it because they've never been tested or they mistakenly believe they've tested negative. Achiang says before doctors from San Francisco opened this clinic, there wasn't anywhere to get tested or treated.
People suffered, and people, most of the people died before this clinic.
This clinic is run by FACES, Family AIDS Care and Education Services. FACES was started 5 years ago by Dr. Craig Cohen, a professor at UC San Francisco's Bixby Center for Global Reproductive Health, as a joint research project with Dr. Elizabeth Bakusi of KEMRI, the Kenya Medical Research Institute.
I've always had this focus of helping those individuals who are less fortunate than me, so are underserved populations.
What started as research now serves more than 60,000 Kenyans, and FACES employs about 400 more in more than 60 other clinics and hospitals that are run by Kenya's Ministry of Health.
They're going to be the leaders. They're the ones who are going to take this country, this region, East Africa, and Sub-Saharan Africa as a whole. They're the ones who are really going to make the situation here, really improve situation.
Cohen and Bakusi and their team of 10 other UC San Francisco researchers think the situation is improving, even in a region where the prevalence of HIV tops 30% in the hardest hit areas.
People are changing their behaviors. Condom usage has gone up. I think people are less likely to engage in some higher risk sexual behaviors.
Nowhere is the sexual behavior riskier than along the rocky shores of Lake Victoria. The world's third largest freshwater lake and the source of the Nile, Victoria is divided among Kenya, Uganda, and Tanzania. Its fish feed more than 20 million people. But on the Kenyan side, its fishermen catch a lot more than Nile perch and tilapia. There is fierce competition for the fish caught in the lake each morning.
As you can see, people are very busy on the boats. They're trying to buy fish.
Fisherman Jeffrey Abure manages the fleet here at Dunga Beach.
The fishing industry involves moving about along the lake, meeting new people.
And the fishermen's cultural traditions contribute to the spread of AIDS as they sail from beach to beach.
A fisherman has to have a wife in each and every beach.
John Paul Otieno Otieno, who works for FACES in the town of Migori, says one of those fishermen's traditions is called jaboya. The fishmongers, who are mostly single women or AIDS widows, must have sex with the fishermen for the right to buy their fish. Another is called sari.
Sari means free.
As in, truck drivers will transport the fish to market for these women for free in return for, yes, more sex.
For these fish not to go bad, you have to befriend them so that your fish can reach the market as fresh as possible. Yeah. And you have to sleep with them.
And Samuel Ndolo, another of the Kenyans working for FACES in Migori, says after selling the morning catch, the fishermen are the richest men in town.
A lot of this money is spent on alcohol and women. And you know, when you put together alcohol and women, then it is the condom that suffers because nobody thinks of it.
But they're starting to. The UCSF KEMRI team is studying the fishermen, handing out condoms, testing male microbicides. Abure says at his beach, at least, sex for fish has been banned and behavior is changing.
People are using condoms. People are opening up for testing.
He was relieved to find out he is HIV negative and he plans to keep it that way.
I'm tested quite often.
Really? How often?
Every 3 months to be safe. Well, protect my family.
But so far, the HIV prevalence among these fishermen has not gone down. It's stuck around 25%. One complicating factor, this is Nyanza Province, home of the Luo people, who include the relatives of President Barack Obama. The Luo are notoriously polygamous.
My grandfather, for example, had four wives. My father had three.
Samuel Ndolo has just one. He says polygamy tends to lead to adultery and the spread of HIV.
If you have, let me say, seven women, you cannot attend to all of them sexually. So there's possibility that somebody from elsewhere will help you in the process, infect your wife. You get the infection and spread it to the other six.
One polygamous Luo man towers over everyone else. He's unusually tall and he has dozens of wives.
He has 42 of them and he's legendary.
His name is Akuku, but everybody calls him Danger. He is 102 years old and his 42nd wife is just 19. Why would a 19-year-old marry Danger? Because her parents told her to.
The man is very rich with a lot of cows.
He has a lot of cows.
Yeah, many, many cows.
He also has about 200 children. We met one who doesn't even know some of his brothers and sisters. And although Danger has lost some of those 42 wives to AIDS, he is HIV negative.
He's 102 years and he's still alive and very strong.
So somehow he did not get AIDS despite 42 wives.
Yeah, miraculously.
The Luo are rural people. They're used to hard and often short lives. C.T. Muga, who runs the community engagement team for FACES, says their fatalistic attitude is one of the reasons this province has the highest HIV rate in Kenya.
Death is not something that threatens them or something that they fear. So the prospects of dying because you have HIV is not scary.
Nationwide, about 7.5% of Kenyans have HIV. By contrast, in the United States, it's about half of 1%. In Nyanza province, it tops 15%, and again along the lake, it can exceed 30. Dr. Craig Cohen of UC San Francisco says that's why here, unlike in the U.S., AIDS is very much a mainstream disease.
If you're not infected, everyone's been affected by HIV, especially in areas with the prevalence as high as what we're dealing with.
It especially affects women and children. AIDS has had a devastating impact on the children of sub-Saharan Africa.
So many of them are orphans. So many of them live in terrible conditions due to poverty.
John Paul Otieno Otieno runs the pharmacy at Migori District Hospital in western Kenya. He also helps lead a children's club for hundreds of HIV-positive kids to play soccer and sing and dance.
Jambo! Jambo pana! Habari gani?
Otieno Otieno is one of the many Kenyans working for FACES, the AIDS program run jointly by UC San Francisco and the Kenya Medical Research Institute. He says virtually every child here is affected by AIDS in some way. Either their parents have died and they're orphans, or they themselves are HIV positive, like this little boy. Many of the AIDS orphans are being raised by their grandparents. Kids as young as 6 or 7 are responsible for making sure their HIV-positive younger siblings take their medicine. And the oldest child is expected to be the family breadwinner, no matter how young he or she is.
It's the initiative of the eldest child. So whether you are 5 years, 6, or what, you'll have to do something so that you get for the family.
That puts tremendous pressure on these children.
They need to buy food for their family. They've been orphaned by HIV/AIDS. They're responsible at very young ages to take care of their families, and an asset is an asset for them. And so their bodies are assets, and they know that, and they've had to drop out of school, and so they can't further their education and therefore use their single asset, which is their body.
UCSF Assistant Professor Catherine Maternowska is a medical anthropologist working in a gender-based violence recovery center in Mombasa. Almost 80% of the women who come in are actually girls under age 15.
Most of the girls that we're seeing, and the boys as well, because this is a problem with young boys along the coast, are being forced out of their households due to economic problems and generally starvation. There's a huge food security issue going on in Kenya. So children are being pushed out of the household to beg, and begging turns to bartering, and bartering turns to selling sex, and selling sex almost always turns to some form of brutality.
Along the coast, there is a thriving sex tourism trade. As Thailand cracks down, men from Europe and the Middle East come here instead, taking advantage of Kenyan girls who are desperate and starving.
they get a higher price for not using a condom, and as a result of that, they'll opt for no condom, and they've told me that implicitly in no minced words. I will take a man that says he doesn't want a condom because he'll pay more.
So the HIV rate among those who sell sex approaches 40%, and even those who are simply begging and not forced into prostitution are often raped. Maternowska says only about 20% of victims bother seeking help because the culture has its own system of justice.
People will solve these problems, these violations, with traditional and customary law in the communities. So often, a girl that's been raped, it will be solved by a chicken being paid by the perpetrator to the family. A chicken. In even worse cases, the girl's forced into marriage with the perpetrator.
Maternowska says even young women trying to get ahead, get an education, are forced to use their bodies as currency.
People trade sex for school tuition. People trade sex, and when I say people, I mainly mean young people and young girls, will trade sex for just about anything in order to survive.
Back in Migori in western Kenya, Emma Atien can bear witness to that. When she was 14, she asked her older sister's husband to help pay her tuition. He said yes in return for sex, and he proceeded to rape her over the next 2 years.
I went to ask them if they can assist me in paying my school fees, and he told me when I need money from him, he has to do it so that he gives me money.
Emma went to school, then she got married and started a family. Then her brother-in-law, her abuser, died of AIDS, and Emma's sister did too. Emma was HIV positive, but she kept it a secret from her husband as long as she could.
When my sister died, I went to the funeral and I was very bitter because I was seeing my in-law had died, the one who infected me, and his wife is also dead. So it's only me remaining. So I knew I was just going to die immediately. And then I wept bitterly. So I just cried, why do you and your husband decided to kill me? Now I'm the only one remaining. I'm going to follow you immediately. Why? Why do you have to kill me? And your husband killed me, and everybody knew that I was positive.
Including her husband, who threw her out of the house, telling her,
just go your way, leave us the children. And I left them the children, and I walked out of marriage.
Her husband and their three kids are HIV negative.
And I just told him to marry a negative woman, and then keep the children for me, because I can die at any time.
She has been HIV positive for 19 years, and on antiretroviral drugs for the last 5. She hadn't seen her kids for 7 years until just a few months ago.
Their father told them that your mother ran away and died. But when I went there, they saw me. I told them, I'm your mother. And the eldest one told me, Daddy told us that you are dead. You ran away and then you died. Are you really our mother? They didn't. They were not getting it. They were not getting the point. But I told them, I'm your mother, but you will come to know more later when you people are big. I cannot explain the whole story for you now. I'm your mother, but stay with your father. I'm your mother.
Now, Emma is a mother-to-mother mentor in Migori, working with the Catholic Medical Mission Board, counseling pregnant women to get tested for HIV.
I want to encourage mothers in the village to know their status.
It's a hard sell. She says most would rather die of AIDS than endure the stigma of being HIV positive.
They just don't want to know, even if they have. They don't want to know, even if they don't know. They don't want to know.
But Emma is the picture of health, thriving on the ARV therapy, so much so that many of the expectant mothers refuse to believe she really has HIV.
I'm really living positively. Everybody, I'm out to disclose it, because out of disclosure, I get more friends, and then I be free.
The drugs that have saved Emma's life are making an extraordinary difference here among those who have HIV. Thousands of people who couldn't possibly afford them are getting them at the FACES clinics. But UC San Francisco's Dr. Craig Cohen, the co-founder of the FACES program, says the long-term answer is not ARVs. It's keeping people from getting the virus in the first place.
We're not going to be able to treat ourselves out of this epidemic. I mean, that's probably in Kenya, for every one person who's being initiated in care and treatment, there's probably 3 individuals who are being infected with HIV every day.
And the withering drought that has parched East Africa is one of the new challenges to stopping that spread. The heat in Africa is searing. It's not just hot here, it's Africa hot. Your SPF 50 sunscreen, useless after about 15 minutes. There's a red clay dust everywhere that gets into everything. For doctors used to San Francisco hospitals, the conditions can be harsh and beyond primitive. At many of the clinics here, there's no electricity, no running water, The autoclaves they use to sterilize instruments are powered by burning charcoal. The atrociously bad roads have more potholes than pavement. It can take several painfully bumpy hours to travel just a few miles. And Mother Nature's made things even tougher lately with the worst drought since the 90s. Four straight dry, rainy seasons. Crops gone. Children and animals dying of starvation. The grasslands are littered with the carcasses of livestock and wildlife.
The drought is terrible. The losses to the country in terms of wildlife this year are going to be really substantial. And I think actually quite devastating.
Dr. Dame Daphne Sheldrick runs the David Sheldrick Wildlife Trust in Nairobi. She raises orphaned elephants, babies whose mothers have been killed by poachers usually. She typically has 10 or 12. Now, because of the drought...
Currently in the nursery we have a record 31, which is the most we've ever had to deal with.
And there are hundreds more calves out there, desperate for milk, waiting to be rescued.
We'll have to make space. That's all there is to it. We'll have to vacate the garages. I mean, when the first elephants came in, they slept in the bedroom. I didn't even have a stable.
Sheldrick says her little orphaned animals prove it's true. An elephant really never forgets.
Two of our elephant mothers that we haven't seen for almost 2 years have brought their babies back because the babies are suffering, their milk is low, and they know that they can get help.
While we were in Kenya, it finally rained so hard it caused massive flooding on the coast, but not enough to end the crisis inland.
This little tiny bit of rain and then nothing for another 2 weeks actually does more harm than good. Because everything starts trying to grow again and then it withers. And that takes the reserves that the roots have. So it really doesn't help.
On vast Lake Victoria, the drought has lowered the water level and the size of the catch for fisherman Jeffrey Abure.
At the moment it's very low because of reduced level of stock in the lake. People are really, really suffering. We can't make ends meet, we can't pay fees for our children. We can't pay our bills.
Millions of Kenyans face food insecurity, not sure when or what they'll eat.
Now there's a food shortage. Food's not getting down to the coast or to many parts of Kenya.
UC San Francisco medical anthropologist Catherine Maternowska, who lives in Mombasa, says the drought contributes to the spread of AIDS because hungry girls and women trade sex for money or a meal. And there's much more demand for the fish caught in the lake.
People trade sex for food. Fish is food. The drought is definitely, the climate definitely has an impact on child prostitution.
In the midst of all this misery, the team from FACES, Family AIDS Care and Education Services, perseveres. Don Willis, a community health worker for FACES, urges HIV-positive Luo women at an open-air clinic in Migori to insist that their men use condoms. They seem to be getting the message.
We are seriously making a difference, and it's very important.
The women line up early in the morning to see a doctor. 52-year-old Rose Agola, who only speaks Swahili and Luo, is here to get her medication.
I came to the clinic because I'm unwell.
HIV, AIDS.
I have HIV and AIDS. I'm sick.
31-year-old Evelyn Oshawaya was infected with HIV by her husband 3 years ago.
First of all, I was shocked, but now I'm just seeing I'm okay because my life is continuing.
She left her husband. It's been 3 good years since, she laughs, and says there's little choice now but to face her disease and seek treatment.
We have to appreciate it because it is the thing that has come.
Willis says 75% of the patients who come to the clinic are women.
Women like to access care. Men are still in that denial stage.
There's a cultural justification for that attitude among Luo men, explains C.T. Muga, one of the Kenyan leaders of the FACES program.
A cow dies with grass in its mouth. Directly translated from Luo, what it means is it doesn't really matter whether I have unprotected sex or how many people I have it with. I'm a man, and I will eventually die, so it doesn't really matter. So I might as well die having had a good time.
Yeah! While the men of Western Kenya have a good time, FACES co-founder Dr. Craig Cohen, his team of 10 fellow UC San Francisco doctors, and their partners from the Kenya Medical Research Institute are finally seeing 5 years of testing and treatment and research pay off.
The hope is that we're helping to turn the tide. The tide is definitely turning.
For example, in Kisumu, where Cohen and Dr. Elizabeth Bakusi started this project 5 years ago, the HIV rate among young women ages 15 to 24 has improved dramatically.
20% of that age group of young women in Kisumu were HIV infected. Now it's 10%. So it's half. Now, 10% is completely unacceptable. However, it is half.
A male circumcision program is reducing the risk of HIV transmission a staggering 60%, enough to overcome cultural taboo and men's fears about the pain, says circumcision counselor Joshua Wary, who had it done at age 28.
It was a bit painful.
But it's hard to argue with a 60% reduction in risk. So many men are lining up for the procedure now that FACES is expanding the program with mobile circumcision clinics. Samuel Ndolo, who leads community outreach for FACES in Migori, says Africa's economic development depends on fighting AIDS head-on.
HIV makes people poor, because when you have a sick community, then the community does not produce.
People don't farm, he says, or work or provide for their families. Instead, they pick out their coffins. As the pyramids of caskets stacked for sale along the dusty Kenyan roads attest. Now, some of those coffins are gathering dust at home because their buyers have been reborn.
2-3 months down the line, you can see someone who was dead, dying, is alive and well. In fact, you won't even recognize them.
C.T. Muga says the American taxpayers need to know what's happening here and be proud of it.
No one gives you an account of what your money is doing. And it's doing great and wonderful things.
Boxes of relief supplies come from the U.S. Agency for International Development. Antiretroviral drugs arrive from Gilead in Foster City. Most of the funding for UCSF's FACES program comes from the CDC as part of PEPFAR, the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, money that goes directly to providing care and treatment.
It has resurrected the dead. People who would otherwise have been dead a long time ago are alive, well, healthy and getting on with their lives, and so are their children. If you're talking about saving lives, this is the one thing that the American taxpayer should know about and should be happy. They have helped millions, better than anything that they have ever done, ever.
Keeping people alive is a wonderful thing, says Dr. Cohen, but the larger goal is to keep them from getting infected in the first place.
I think we will see significant reductions in incidence over time.
Maybe it takes a relentless optimist not to be overwhelmed by the bleakness of Africa's AIDS epidemic. But when you see the smiling faces of singing kids who had little chance of survival just a few short years ago, Samuel Ndolo says it's easy to feel proud instead and a sense of hope for the future.
We've changed lives. I see lives of people changing in a big way, and that makes me and everybody who works here very, very happy.
Reporting from Nairobi, Doug Sovereign, KCBS.